Playback on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Dublin Airport's Airport Club. Make travel effortless with lounge access, stress-free parking, fast-track security and exclusive duty-free savings.
Good morning. So the summer is over and it all is back. And what a welcome back it was for Social Democrats leader Holly Cairns. She had to answer questions about TD Eoghan Hayes after photographs were published of him wearing brown makeup on his hands and face to dress up as Barack Obama at a Halloween party 16 years ago. His leader spoke to Morning Ireland.
There are so many issues that me and the party would prefer to be focusing on. Instead, we're talking about this. And so at the outset, I just want to be clear that blackface is a form of racism. And in the Social Democrats, we abhor all kinds of racism. So I'm glad that Deputy Hayes has acknowledged that, taken full responsibility for it. He said that he didn't understand how objectionable and hurtful it was at the time, but that he should have known better.
But when did he tell you about this?
I only became aware of this yesterday evening.
Did he tell you?
No, we heard from the media.
Have you had a conversation with him?
A brief one. Like I said, I only found out about this yesterday evening. I've only spoken to Owen very briefly since I started back. So that's something that I'll need to do in more detail later date.
Will he be attending your gathering today?
Deputy Hayes has decided not to attend today because he doesn't want to take attention away from the important issues that we're focusing on at our party think-in today.
What action are you going to take?
If this had happened, Mary, last week or even last year, I think it's very clear that he would no longer be a Social Democrats TD. The fact that this happened 16 years ago is a very different situation. It is indefensible. It is wrong. He didn't understand how wrong it was at the time. And he knows that he should have known better and has issued that unreserved apology. Blackface is a form of racism. It was then, it is now.
A little while later, journalist Craig Hughes, who broke this story, was on Today with Claire Byrne and was asked, was it really fair to hold someone to account for something they did back in their student days?
The only reason that Eoghan Hayes wasn't booted out of the Social Democrats after the Palantir Shares scandal was simply to do with the Dáil arithmetic. And him coming back into the fold this Dáil term gives them greater speaking rights over the Labour Party, which means they'll be called on Nader's questions after Sinn Féin, not the Labour Party as it was last time around.
But it's their prerogative, though, Craig, to make those decisions about who's in and who's out, right?
No, it is, of course, but they've made a political calculation that it was worth taking the flak over having someone in their party who literally went against everything that the Social Democrats had said they stood for. Like when he was brought back in, we were told everyone deserves a second chance. I mean, how many chances is Eoghan Hayes going to get in the Social Democrats? And really, I think it calls into question the judgment of the leadership.
Well, on the fact that this was 16 years ago, and Holly Cairns herself raised this, there were plenty online I saw last night saying essentially, you know, who amongst us hasn't done something really stupid in our late teens or our early 20s that we mightn't be proud of and mightn't want photographic evidence of around the place? I mean, there are plenty who would probably, if they have a good think about it, feel embarrassed about things that they did back in the day. What do you say to that?
I think there's a big jump between doing something you're embarrassed by and blackface, to be honest. And this is after he graduated from college. He was president of the students' union at the time. So, I mean, I think you would have expected a lot more from someone at that age. It's not like he was in first year of college or in Leaving Cert or anything like that. And I think the reaction has been quite strong, even from within the Social Democrats in particular, because they accept, as Holly Cairns said this morning, that it is racist. I really think the reason that they're skirting around the edges here is, again, deeply cynical and just goes back to their own political positioning. Mm-hmm.
Law lecturer Larry Donnelly was on Liveline, and while not condoning Hayes' actions, he felt like adding some perspective.
I'm not sure I'm defending Eoghan Hayes. I'm saying, look, this is from 16 years ago when he was a college kid. He did something stupid. I mean, blackface is not appropriate. It's not acceptable. He did something stupid when he was in college. Who amongst us hasn't done something like that? To me, you know, this is a tempest in a teapot or whatever the saying might be. I don't think that this is very much, and you know, it's a story, we're talking about it, but I really don't think it's all that relevant.
It is a while ago, but it's after Lions stopped using minstrels to advertise their tea. It's after Blackjack Confectionery stopped using gollywogs on their wrappers. And it's after HB removed gollywogs from their ice cream wrappers. I mean, people knew there was something amiss with white people appearing to be black people.
And that's why I'm not defending what he did. He made a mistake. There is no doubt about that. But it wasn't born out of any malice. It was a stupid thing to do. When you're young, when you're in college, you do stupid things. God knows I did a lot of them. It's obvious that this was not done out of any sense of malice, out of any sense of bigotry. Indeed, he was an avid supporter of Barack Obama and even, I think, went to work on his 2012 re-election campaign. So this didn't come from a bad place. It was a stupid thing to do. Let's move on. I think it only gets legs, really, in this instance, because Owen Hayes is who Owen Hayes is.
So after all that, who would want to be a political leader? Well, on Morning Ireland, Gavin Jennings was in literary mode, interviewing Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin.
This is the Taoiseach's home constituency, not far from Nemo Rangers GAA club, where his son plays in goals, and for the county football team, the last men's team to bring a senior All-Ireland back to Cork the year before Micheál Martin became Fianna Fáil leader 15 years ago. We're in Rochestown, not far from Habersham House, where Charles Dickens reputedly stayed and got the inspiration for Miss Havisham in his novel Great Expectations. Can Micheál Martin deliver on the Great Expectations set out by his government at the start of their five-year term this year?
Taoiseach Micheál Martin likes being leader so much he has no plans to give it up anytime soon, despite the occasional hard times.
Before I let you go, 15 years leading Fianna Fáil now. You told the Sunday Times at the weekend you plan to lead Fianna Fáil into the next general election. That'll be 20 years and more if you stay on after the election. You'll be into your 70s then. One of your predecessors, when we asked him about how long he planned to stay in the job, mused that some Chinese leaders rule into their 80s. Are you heading for thinking like Haughey now?
I remember after that he didn't do too well in terms of that commentary. I get sort of tired of these questions because every general election...
Can't go on forever though, can you?
No, but it's only 8 months. Well, how long? 9 months since the general election. We won a good win, but the issue has to be on the issues that face the people. I'm focused on the issues we discussed earlier, the budget, housing, and so on like that. I'm energetic, I engage, I enjoy politics, but it's not just about enjoying politics, it's about getting things done. I'm still anxious and worried, not worried, angry at the lack of progress on issues around disability. And the issues around housing.
Reporter Barry Lenehan was a busy man this week. He began on Today with Clare Byrne, outlining where things stood in the presidential race. It's just another manic Monday. Wish it was Sunday. That's my fun day. I don't have to run day. It's just another manic Monday.
Sure, any excuse to play that, but it is a manic Monday for independents hoping to secure a place in the presidential race. 10 county councils across the country set to hear their pitches. And earlier this morning, MMA fighter Conor McGregor announced he was withdrawing his bid following, as he said, careful reflection and consulting with his family. Let's start with Conor McGregor's announcement this morning. So he's out. He had been due, though, to address Dublin City Council and a couple of others today, right?
That's right. Yeah, he was supposed to go before Dublin, Kildare, Roscommon as well, to make his pitch to be the next Uachtaráin na hÉireann, but Conor McGregor tapping out the former MMA fighter this morning.
By evening, there was some clarity as one potential candidate stepped out, joining Barry's long list of non-starters.
Another high-profile non-runner who joined Bertie Ahern, Joe Duffy, Jarlath Burns, Moraine McGuinness, Francis Black, Michael Flatley, Mary Lou McDonald, Tony Holohan, Joanna Donnelly, Sean Kelly, Mary Hannafin, Eamon O'Queeve, Rose Conway Walsh and Bob Geldof in ruling out a run for the Auras.
Barry barely had time to catch his breath before he was dispatched to London for the visit of US President Donald Trump. And not everyone was rolling out the red carpet, as he heard.
Well, in many ways, we've already achieved what we needed to achieve. Donald Trump has arrived in this country on an unprecedented second state visit. And guess what? He's not in London. He's hiding behind the walls of Windsor Castle, where no one's going to see him, where he's going to have absolutely next to no interaction with anyone, including the world's media, who are camped outside trying to get access. This is not democracy. This is not how you hold the most powerful man in the world to account.
Say it loud, say it clear. Donald Trump's not welcome here.
I'm Sylvia Jones from Dublin. And I'm here specifically in London just for this demonstration Wednesday, just to show my disgust and abhorrence of the person as an individual, never mind a political leader, to share my sorrow and compassion and embarrassment for the Brits, in particular King Charles, for having to entertain this pompous ass and an absolute big baby.
We are here, as it says on our signs, because we are all descended from people who survived the Holocaust. We are naturally primarily concerned right now with the genocide and the massacres which are going on in Palestine and Gaza. But our particular interest in being here today is because we know that there is one single person in the world who has the power right now in their own individual hands to bring an end to the suffering of the people of Gaza. Starmer and the British government are only doing this because they are completely and utterly craven to Trump.
In the end, the visit wasn't very Trump-like, with diplomatic tension kept to a minimum.
Well, Sarah, I'm standing not far from number 10 Downing Street, and if you strain your ear ever so slightly, you might hear a collective whooping and hollering and the popping of champagne corks from British Prime Minister Keir Starmer's offices, because really the feeling here is that today really they got away with it. Donald Trump, often so volatile and unpredictable on so many issues, came today perhaps in more reflective mood, perhaps tired out from his packed schedule. One political note as well, Donald Trump saying, I don't know Peter Mandelson. I don't know him, actually. And hearing the Republican representative on with Cormac earlier on, it reminds us of the episode of The Simpsons when they were booing Mr. Burns and his aide, Smithers, saying, no, they are saying boo Earns, not booing you. Some media have already dug out photos from the 8th of May showing Mr. Mandelson and President Trump together, an occasion which President Trump apparently said Peter Mandelson was a good-looking fellow. So
okay.
Lots of
so
questions around that
know
one.
Him. Just sort of doesn't know him.
Away from the sometimes volatile political world, Shea Byrne provided some early morning consistency and revealed himself to be something of a scone connoisseur.
And that's the latest traffic and travel news.
Sinead Ní Uachtaráin live in studio.
I know, who'd have thunk it? Running down, was I out of breath? When technology doesn't go in your favour.
You're having trouble linking the two studios. Porrick, sorry, my apologies, I'm with you in a moment. Porrick's on standby in NH1.
And I don't even have my headphones.
But you came all the way down.
Oh yeah, it's
all
nice
the way
to see you.
Down, four studios down. We couldn't get the connection going. I think if you pull the string a little bit tighter.
Yeah, it might work now for Morning Ireland. Get my steps in anyway.
How are you? Did you have a nice weekend?
Yeah, very nice weekend.
Did you do anything?
Very relaxed, did nothing. But that was the best thing about it, doing nothing.
My daughter was working in Tullamore over the weekend, so I was there. So
yeah, I heard you talking about the ice cream earlier. And I like the idea of a cup of tea after an ice cream, always.
They were doing a big birthday thing in the shopping centre in the bridge. So it's good old fun. They had a spinning wheel. I was eating scones and eating cream cakes and everything. I had a better time than anyone else. Have a nice, thanks for coming down.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
Porrick, my apologies for the late arrival of the sports news due to the Sinead Ní Uachtaráin. For the first time probably in 3 years being in the studio.
Yeah, I would have gone over if I'd known Sinead was popping in.
Gosh, we could have had tea and an ice cream.
Scones.
Scones. Cherry scone.
Oh, okay, I'm not mad about that.
Have you had a cherry scone though?
Okay, I'll admit I haven't.
Well, there you go now. I put it to you, Porrick, that you haven't had a cherry scone. Pear scones as well, with white chocolate in them. You have everything. Bewley's used to do a lovely sticky bun with cherries in it with that sugar on top. Oh, it's lovely.
That's gone back a bit.
Yeah. Well, so do I.
Dermot Whelan also had something to say about tea when he talked about his parents' bedroom antics.
Here's a thing I would love your opinion on. I was only remembering this week that my parents had something in their bedroom that seems quite shocking these days. Easy. It was a tea maker. A tea maker you put beside the bed. A whole tea making machine that you put beside the bed, complete with old fashioned alarm clock that began making your tea before you awoke. And like so many things from the 80s, like snorkel jackets and moving statues, it just seemed so normal at the time to have this thing beside the bed. I don't know about you, but I can't seem to reach for my phone by the bed at night without knocking over a glass of water. So the prospect of having boiling water inches from my face isn't an attractive one. And I also think these machines were possibly not a reflection of how obsessed our parents were about tea, but possibly a reminder to us of just how cold our houses were back then. You know, these days we think nothing of nipping downstairs and put on the kettle. But back then, the scalding tea had to be less than a foot from your head before you were brave enough to navigate the freezing temperatures and the bungalows without insulation. But I wonder, did anyone else have them? Did anyone else have a tea maid, a teas maid or tea maker in their house? Or was my family just particularly Dallas or dynasty? They're the kinds of things, though, you could see becoming very cool again, couldn't you? Like if one TikToker buys one and then suddenly everybody wants one at Christmas and they're completely sold out.
Dermot Whelan with some hot bedroom tips. Electric Picnic for Farmers was held this week in Screggan, County Offaly, which meant plenty of this. Some of this.
Spend the weekends over drinking, Mondays over thinking, will I find a better plan? But I'll try my best and I'll die trying. It's just the way I am.
And not forgetting this fella.
Tell you what, I tell you what, because I'm on the canvassing trail today with the Poultry Before People party, we keep our promise.
Even our Audrey was pitching for a new gig.
Well, if anyone's looking for a judge for the brown bread baking competition, I'll be first in line to do that, no problem.
Just after the gates opened, reporter Joe Caulfield had the wellies on early and was getting voices for Morning Ireland.
We've been very excited about it all week, so the weather is good and we're looking forward to a great couple of days. If you're into machinery, this is heaven. If you're into livestock, you're going to see the best livestock that there is to be seen. I think there's something for everybody and it's going to be an absolutely fantastic day.
You know, the new innovations for cattle farming and all sorts. See what's new. See, my uncle will be a farmer now, he'd be all into it, so I'll have a look around, anything new he'd be interested in. Anything to help and make life easier on the farm, like, is all brilliant.
This week, I suppose, see a lot of the cattle expeditions, the farm machinery. I suppose, keep these lads entertained. They came up to see all the sports stands, and I suppose they're having a day off school, and also myself a day off work as well, so that's the main thing.
Lads, what are you looking forward to? Tell us.
See all the sports stuff, like Elvery's, O'Neill, McKeever.
Do you think you might get an old jersey or something out of it?
Yeah, I will, yeah.
Yeah, the O'Neill's. And McKeever.
I like the cookery and flowers. I love flowers. My house full of flowers. I just love flowers. I love to look at flowers. And I love the cookery end of it. You want a good pair of boots. A good pair of wellies. And you want a good raincoat and everything else that goes with farming.
Of course, it wouldn't be the ploughing without rural royalty.
Mr. Marty Morrissey, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Marty Morrissey.
How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good to see you, Ray.
How long did it take you to get here? Were you stopped for selfies, etc.?
We got quite a number of selfies, and I'm sure we met a couple of people here as well. To be worse if they thought they didn't want to have a selfie, that'd be much worse. So it's a great honour and a privilege that anybody would want a photograph with me.
Uh-huh.
But then people do mistake me for Tom Cruise.
Did anybody,
what are you laughing at?
Did anybody nudge you, Marty, and say, did you think of the presidency at all?
Well, a few people actually did say it to me, but I think... Look, it's the greatest honour that could be bestowed on any Irish man or woman.
Were you sounded out, as they say?
I was sounded out,
oh,
yes.
Really?
That's the right way of describing it. But look, I wish the candidates all the success and the best of luck over the next couple of weeks. And it is a couple of weeks now.
It is, yeah.
But it is a huge, massive honour, and I wish them all the best.
Would the Oars even be big enough for a Marty party? It wasn't all wellies and selfies, though. As farmers had several issues they wanted to highlight, Audrey Carvel ploughed through some of these with Agriculture Minister Martin Hayden.
Farmers continue to take a number of measures around improving water quality and are farming very differently today than they were in the past. But the Commission has outlined their requirement now for us to also address compliance with the Habitats Directive. So we are in detailed negotiations with the Commission.
Is that where we might fall down on the biodiversity end of things?
Well, to be clear, we're being asked to do something that no other European country has had to do yet in their farming system around the Habitats Directive. So what we're saying back very clearly to the Commission is how onerous an undertaking this is, and while we are on for doing that, we need them to understand the amount of time that would take.
We're the only country, because we're the only country left in the EU who wants the nitrates derogation extended.
And we're the only country in line to hold on to a derogation. I believe we have a very good chance of holding on to it because of my work and that of colleagues across government to having this as a top priority of government. But the reason that we should still have it is that our farming system is very different in Ireland to most of Europe. You know, we are a country that has a pasture-based system. Irish cows are out on grass on average 240 days of the year, compared to the intensive system across Europe where a lot of those cows don't see the sky too often. It's a very different model, and that's why we've had this derogation for a very long time.
Someone whose connection to land and eco issues has never wavered is writer and documentary maker Moncon McGann. Moncon is facing a very different battle now, though, as he joined Brendan O'Connor in studio, having spent the past number of weeks in a hospital bed.
This sort of cancer that I've been playing with for the last year and a half suddenly took a turn.
Okay.
And started spreading through. My brother plays a game. He says, mention any limb in your body, Moncon, and bet you have cancer in it. And so far that seems to be, it's in a bit of my lungs and my brain and my liver and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Okay, Moncon, I'm really sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And it's only prostate cancer. It's like the easiest cancer. But there's some rare particular type of cancer or prostate cancer that'll just devour you.
And what are they doing for you?
They're going to bring me a little bit of chemo. And that works for about 50 or 60% of cases. And then they'll try... Well, we did a bit of radio for just pain. But mostly I'm focused on thinking, Jesus, there's books, there's films, there's things I want to do.
Yeah.
And I can't do very much stuff in my hospital bed.
How are you feeling?
It depends on the day. Like, for some reason, there hasn't been much despair. Or there hasn't been much, why me, why me?
Really, yeah.
I don't know why. There's a lot of pain, you know. The bone pain is a kind of dull, thudding thing. But then
are you in bad pain now?
No, nothing at the moment.
Okay.
No. And otherwise, it's a lovely thing to know that I can plan my last few... Is it months or years? We don't know. It's probably...
What are they saying to you?
We might get a year or two. And it's, you know, and we'll definitely get another few months. So there's a creativity to think, you know, what? 27 years ago, I bought this land in Westmeath and planted an oak forest on it. And thinking, like, I can give this to this home tree, this land, native woodland charity that I've been involved with for 10 years.
Okay, people are thinking, why did you drag this man, St. James, in here? Yeah. But you really wanted to come in today, didn't you?
I did. Well, two reasons. First, to beg people not to send me blessings and letters and weird mystery hopes or cures and things. But no, like the last 5 years for me, it's almost been like a cancer of creativity. I'm just dropping these books and TV series, every few months about the Irish language, different aspects of Irish culture. And there was one aspect I wanted. There was a book I wanted to write about Ireland and weather. It just makes sense, the Irish language and weather. Because you know the way they boast that the Inuit have like whatever, 99 words or 100 words for snow, which isn't actually true. Like, but Irish, I decided, I set myself a challenge. Are there 99 words for rain? And I found actually there was way more than that. We decided, let's put this collection of words for rain and for weather. They've never been amassed. So it's called 99 words for rain and one for sun. There genuinely is only one word, unbrilliant. There's no other word. It's almost an indigenous way of seeing the land, that you have this profound way of observing every element of nature.
Moncon's spiritualism has helped inform and perhaps soothe his views on mortality.
It's made it a lot easier, a huge amount easier. Now, I can't say it's a ride in the park. I can't say there's, you know, not times where waves of tears come over me and my partner, who I never sort of talk about much. But obviously, it's so hard. She's slightly younger than me. And like, when I think of her being left, that's what saddens me.
Yeah.
That's what breaks my heart. But it is not making it pain-free for me. It's not meaning that I'm just, you know, dancing delightedly towards my death.
Yeah.
There's huge sadness at times.
I'm the same age as you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, if this was going on for me, I wouldn't be sitting here as upbeat as you are. I feel I'd be raging against the unfairness of it all and all of that.
But I remember hearing John Moriarty when he was facing his cancer. John Moriarty, this great Kerry philosopher, this bog man, this wild man. I don't know, it did me so much good to hear him at the time talking about sound, but also thought it's part of life, you know. And it's that intimacy of radio. I remember when I used to get depressed at 18 or 19, be listening to Jerry Ryan and realising there was a man also who was vulnerable with his emotions. I just think it's good to talk about these things.
Yeah. Are you scared?
No. For some reason, I'm not scared. No, there's the sadness. The sadness of thinking about my partner being alone. Luckily, I don't have kids. That's a huge blessing. I've had this real strong sense that there is this, and it's a naff term, like an age of Aquarius. There does seem to be this new enlightenment, this new interest in the land, in language, in a more intuitive, maybe more natural, more sort of feminine, if that's a term one can use, way of being in the world. I believe that's going to grow. And I believe me being in a white body from the 1970s is not the ideal person to be talking about the goddess, as I do in a lot of my books, or to be talking about this sensitivity. So I mean, reincarnation is a story, it's a myth. I have no idea if it's true or not. But it's an interesting, for me, it's a handy way to talk about it.
Okay.
I do believe that, so I go to this, what I do know, I leave this body, it's probably a confusing few hours or days, won't be months. I think probably some people get stuck for months, but I'd say I'd be pretty good at the transfer. Remember all that other life I've been, all that being I've been for thousands of years beyond the physical body, the times that I wasn't in the physical body. And I'd say pretty soon again, I'll probably come into another body to continue this work. Most likely as a woman, most likely not white, most likely not in Ireland. Because I just think there's a new era for the planet. That it could be the oxycodone, it could be the drugs talking, but I don't believe it. In my heart, I believe this is a time of great change on the planet. And I want to be young and energetic and part of that. There's a lot of work to do.
And on Sunday, as it happens, Sunday Miscellany rebroadcast a special Culture Night programme live from the Auras, where Moncon riffed on rain as only he can. Here's a spattering of it.
I sat at my desk looking out at the fields and the trees, thinking of something summery. But all I could see was unvashtach. The rain, unvashtach. Eig grada bashti, it pelting rain. Or beating, trouncing down with rain. Eig grada bashti. Or eig kaila bashti, which is driving, twisting, coiling rain. Eig laska bashti, which is lashing or whipping or flogging down with rain. Eig kur dawar, which is raining torrents or pouring with floods. It was useless. It was impossible. How could I possibly write about warm, sunny, sultry things? I put the whole notion aside and left it for a few days. But sure enough, when I sat back down at the desk and looked out again, Vishefos eg kur. It was still, well, eg kur means putting, but actually it also means raining. Vishe eg kur. Eg kur gan steana, it was raining ceaselessly. Now, eg kur can also mean ploughing and sowing and burying and propelling and setting out and laying down and countless other things. But more often than not, tosh eg kur means it's raining. So tosh eg kur bashti eg kur farne, it's raining. But even when you use eg kur to refer to sowing or ploughing or burying, it's normally raining at the same time.
The mighty Moncon McGann there. On Sunday with Miriam, Tommy Tiernan and storyteller and philosopher Dr. Martin Shaw spoke about their upcoming tour. But could there be friction on the tour bus yet? Martin was asked if there was much of a difference between old Irish and old English stories.
Yeah, there's more grief in the Irish. They're more extreme.
Do you take responsibility for that?
I do. It's quite a few cab drivers have brought up on the way back and forth from Dublin Airport.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the reason for our sadness, Dr. Martin Shaw.
Moving swiftly on, Tolkien, the great Tolkien, said an interesting thing about Irish myth. He said Irish myth is like a stained glass window that someone has thrown a brick through. So it's filled with glorious fragments, but it's quite hard to put the whole thing together and hold it in your hand. Now, what he was really getting at was that there is a quality in Irish myth which is very much like being in a dream. It's very dreamlike, the Aisling. But the kind of stories that Tolkien loved, which were Saxon and Norse, there's more of an A to B to C. You get there, even the metaphors do a different thing.
Mm. Where does the title come from of your show, Between Dog and Wolf?
I can't remember. I remember I came up with Would you, are you claiming responsibility?
I absolutely, 100%.
No, I think I came up with it and then you changed it.
Lies. Okay. Already the fictions begin.
It could be like the Gallagher brothers all over again. Someone well used to artistic tension is poet and punk rock legend Patti Smith, who comes to Dublin in October to perform her seminal 1975 album, Horses. Lise Hans spoke about her on Arena.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine.
It's just, it's unconventional, it's confrontational, it's uncompromising, but it's just a wonderful piece of wordsmithery as well, which it's sets out the stall, I think, of where this album is going. It's like, this is going to be, this isn't going to be Moonspoon June. This is going to be something very different. I'm going to be talking about the big themes. I'm going to be talking about love, sex, death. Like, everything is almost in that initial sentence. And the command at which she just throws it out there, it, you know, you, it forces you to sit up and listen.
The photo on the front of the album of Patti by the legendary Robert Mapplethorpe, it's an iconic photo in the history of rock.
It's completely iconic. It's, and again, it was, you know, so unlike anything else that was out there. A lot of overwrought kind of colour, you know, covers, and sort of coming out of the late 60s where there was an awful lot of psychedelia and so on, you know, so the covers are really in your grill. This is on this sort of monochromatic, incredibly stark. She's just sort of leaning against a wall in a white shirt that she'd bought in the Salvation Army. And she, because she liked the monogram, because it reminded her of a Brassai photograph, you know, like, this is where we're going here. Her own black jacket, some black ribbon she liked. And she, Robert Mapplethorpe and herself were lifelong friends. Well, you know, she met him literally the day, more or less the day she arrived to New York. 20 years old, had just given a baby up for adoption, went to crash in somebody's house and found that they had moved on and he was there. They became lifelong friends, lovers for a while. And he literally just said, stand against that wall there and I'll knock off a few shots. And she recounts this. She said, I'll take 12. When he got to 8 and he says, I have it. And she goes, how do you know? And he just said, I just know. And which, you know, is just such a, it's just such a great, you know, it's.
It sounds like how geniuses operate. Yeah. They just go, look, I have it.
That's exactly it. It's just how geniuses operate. Like, and the, but also the sort of, again, that punk spirit, we're going back to that sort of punk spirit. That's the slight ramshackleness of it, you know?
Brian O'Connell here. Now, in the growing tradition of public figures being candid and honest about decisions they make after they've left office, that is, former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar was on with Brendan O'Connor to talk about his new memoir, Speaking My Mind. Brendan began by asking if Leo was a shy person.
Yes. I prefer the term reserved. You've probably heard the joke about the two Englishmen on the desert island who never got to speak because they're waiting for someone to introduce them.
Yeah.
And I'm probably a bit like that. And sometimes people, I think, interpret it maybe as being a bit cold. But I don't think I'm cold at all. I think I'm actually a pretty warm person once you get to know me.
Yeah, you say almost as a throwaway, you say, as someone who grew up in a family where feelings were kept private.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, look, I'm close to my family. They're all at the launch the other night, and took them for dinner afterwards. My sister lives in London. I'll be seeing her at the launch event in London next week. So
was it a repressed?
No, just not a touchy feely family.
How did that affect you? Do you think internalizing that?
I think it just is part of the reason why I am quite reserved, and I don't necessarily feel the need to tell people that I'm happy or angry or sad or whatever. And there's pluses and minuses that, you know, when you're, I know one of the criticisms of me as a politician was that I often lacked empathy. And I don't think I lack empathy, but I think I'm not good at performative empathy. I used to feel that it was a bit fake, but it's actually not, you know, performative empathy is important. That's an important part of communications. And
interesting.
It took me a while to, I was well into my first term of Taoiseach before I really understood that it wasn't actually contrived, that it was, you know, sometimes you actually need to show you care.
You say that fitting in was very important to your parents. I thought that was interesting. Is that a defense mechanism of immigrants like your dad, that you must fit in because you're different?
Well, I think I grew up in a very different Ireland. You know, I grew up in Dublin 15, Banchestown, Castleknock area, which is now one of the most diverse parts of Ireland. But like when I went to school, I was the only brown kid with a funny surname. Yeah, so definitely kind of wanted to fit in.
Keep your head down
Didn't want to be treated any differently. And you are, you know, just by virtue of the fact that you have a foreign surname, that you're a person of colour. You know, people would make assumptions about you that they wouldn't about other people. It's unconscious bias that people are often very unaware of, certainly the majority.
So you are trying to kind of super assimilate all the time then?
I think so. I don't bother at all now. But I think partially being
that's exhausting for a kid, isn't it?
Well, look, partially being biracial and also being gay too. You know, I was very keen in my early years through adolescence, certainly into early adulthood, to be very normal. And also maybe be quite conservative. And that changed for me for lots of different reasons.
In reflecting on his political legacy, Brendan suggested Leo Varadkar had failed in relation to not solving the housing crisis.
I think it's the worst and the most serious and most acute problem that we face as a country. You know, the country
got a lot worse in your time, didn't it?
It got worse, yeah. I'm not denying that. We did not succeed in fixing the housing crisis, and that's an understatement. In our defence, and hope you'll allow me to do this,
okay.
There are a few things that we did that I think shouldn't be missed. You know, when I got into government, there were about 7,000 houses a year being built. It's now over 30,000, so we quadrupled the number of new homes being built. We set up a state developer in the LDA. Social housing is now being built at a pace we haven't seen since the 1970s. And the number of first-time buyers now, it's 500-600 a week. That's the highest since the Celtic Tiger period.
Was being Taoiseach everything you hoped?
I can't even remember what I hoped. it was 2017, and it seems like a lifetime ago. I know it was great, and I loved it, and it was a real privilege, and I enjoyed it, and it was great to be able to make a difference. But I also knew the point at which I didn't enjoy it anymore.
Is it fair to say that there were kind of a number of events, things that happened that made you, and I think as well Matt, your partner, and we know that people's families, partners are very important in these situations, get more disenchanted with public life. So people were annoyed when you went to the Mighty Hoopla Festival in London. This was at a time
which I should not have done.
Yeah, and this was at a time when the Electric Picnic had been cancelled.
Yeah, it was also a time when we were lifting the restriction on major events 2 days later, and in my head I thought, you know, 2 days doesn't make a difference, but it did,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, because you forgot who you were in that, the optics of that. You said that's when you first thought, I don't want to do this anymore.
You know, one of the things that I experienced during the pandemic, I think like a lot of people, but more so given the job that I had, was being at home in the evenings. You know, I was a politician from the age of 23, 24. Before that, I was a junior doctor. You know, for probably the first time since I was a kid, I was actually at home in the evenings. You know, what one thing I'm really experiencing now and really loving about life is, you know, four or five nights a week, I cook my own dinner. Just kind of little normal things in life that you forget are possible.
Some refreshing honesty from former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, almost a year and a half since he last held office. On Friday, Oscar winner and Cork's finest Cillian Murphy was on with Dermot to talk about his new film, Steve, which has renewed his appreciation for teachers.
Morning, Dermot. How are you?
I'm good. I've just got to check off the bat. Like, you're not here because you're Mary Lou's presidential game changer, are you?
I can confirm I'm not running for the presidency and I'm not playing Voldemort.
But look, it is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant film, Steve. I know you're very proud of it. I know you've lots of teachers in your family, actually, your mum, dad, grandfather, aunts, uncles. How did they react to the movie? Do they approve?
My mum and dad haven't seen it yet, so I hope they will. It was very present in my life growing up, for sure. But you know that thing when you're growing up, you kind of feel when you're in school that the teacher's lives end at, you know, 3:30, and you just don't think about what happens afterwards. And then when you're at home, they're just your parents and they come home, they look after you. And it's only as I've gotten older, I've kind of really realized what a massive job it is and how vocational it is and what a calling it is and how both my parents took it deadly seriously and then came home and looked after 4 of us. And it's an awful lot of work, you know, to do it well.
And from Cillian to CMAT's fashion choice, Dermot also spoke to twins Brody and Muireann McFeely about their Daniel O'Donnell-inspired dress designs.
Daniel O'Donnell dress specifically was inspired by Harry Gordon did a Bob Dylan paper dress, and then we just kind of wanted to make our version of it, and then who better from Donegal to pick than Daniel O'Donnell?
Of course. Have you ever met him? Do you know the man?
Met him a couple times when I was a kid.
Anyone just Googles Daniel O'Donnell dress, you're going to see it. So it's a big close-up of his face in print on the dress.
We made sure it was all cleared before anything.
Okay, yeah. I'm not sure he's too happy about it, though. Daniel, is all this okay?
Of course it is, Dermot. Good morning. Good morning, girls. How are you doing? Good morning.
Hello.
But I'm delighted for Myrne and Brody too. I look at it and I think, God save us, how does that happen? Well done. I mean, to highlight Donegal, you're speaking to the converted, you're singing to the choir there anyway.
Thank you so much for your love on the dress, and we're glad you like it.
International fashion icon Daniel O'Donnell on with Dermot. Now, do you remember when Sunday nights used to mean this? Ooh, the fear is still very real. But according to Crossy, the Sunday night team tune for a younger generation has changed to something far more refined. He was on McClare to discuss TV shows that have morphed onto the big screen.
In that, isn't it? It's like a warm hug.
Lovely
to see you.
You too. Like,
I love that music.
Abbey.
We both sort of went, and started to play.
We used to watch this at home, me and a couple of my friends, because we used to go out Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
You'd be wrecked on the Sunday.
And Sunday would be Chinese, have a chat, a glass of whatever. And this would be on. And it turned into a thing where it was that comfort. We didn't have Glenroe anymore. We didn't have Heartbeat. Downton Abbey became that sort of fear that everyone had. And it was sometimes you were watching it go, nothing happened in it. But that was the point of it, that it was just nice TV. And little
but,
did they
but
know,
it did the successful mm-hmm. transition to the big screen, didn't it?
Hugely. Mm. This did so well right across the world. Is it going to be the last movie?
Well, they did call it the finale,
I know,
didn't they?
But
you know, I mean, they're dragging the
look
out
at
of
Fast
it now.
And the Furious. Too Fast, Too Furious. I saw someone say Too Downton, Too Abbey. It will go on.
Okay, have we time for one more? Maybe not. To Simpsons? Let's have a listen to The Simpsons for a sec. So the animated juggernaut, that is The Simpsons, mm-hmm. how did that do on the big screen?
So The Simpsons went on for 20 years and then it got a movie. It did so well. Like, I mean, huge box office success. Everyone was saying, this movie is good. There's going to be a second movie. Everyone knows Spider-Pig does whatever Spider-Pig does. You know, all those little things when it came to it. But it's not going to happen. The writers, producers and all that says there was so much burnout in the team because they were also doing the series that they couldn't add in another movie to
they
it.
Don't
and
have
they
the
said,
time.
It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So they said for mental health and for everyone's reasons, we're going to keep it on the back burner till whenever. And we still
on
have it going.
Go. It's now I want to see the Downton Abbey movie. I might put that on my
do.
On
it's
my
good.
List.
It is good.
And I feel like it should be a cinema experience as well.
Yes, with a popcorn and, you know, wearing your big, all the posh Downton Abbey clothes.
Would you like to see me now going to see him at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all dressed up?
Why is she dressed like that?
Yeah. I'll bring you with me.
You can just picture Claire and Crossy arriving in their carriage to a screening in Dundrum, can't you? But if they happen to take the bus, they may not find the same civility on board as exists in Downton Abbey. Anne phoned Liveline and told Colm about having to stand on a recent bus journey where not one of the passengers would offer her a seat.
I got on a bus in Blackrock on Saturday around tea time, which was absolutely packed, packed. In the wheelchair space, there was a young lady in a wheelchair. So there's usually a bit of space there where you can stand. But somebody had put one of these suitcases, the wheelie suitcases, so I couldn't go in there. So I'm holding on, like a pole dancer, holding on to two bars, trying to keep me steady. I was terrified that I was going to fall. And I looked down the bus at the age of the people, and I think I was the oldest person standing on that bus.
All right. Did you?
I'm 82 years of age.
Okay, 82, 82 years of age, and
yes.
I mean, how are your legs? What's your general state of health like?
Well,
I'm not asking that in the context of you saying you look like a pole dancer. That's I mean the health of your legs rather than the look of them.
Column, steady on. Until next time.